Hello and welcome back to another edition of Inside Network Marketing. This is your host, Len Clements, and this is May 31st, 2009, show number 7, I believe it is. Actually, the next couple of shows are going to be a little bit out of order as far as the dates, because I conducted and recorded my interview with Randy Gage about 3 days ago. So the Randy Gage interview will be coming up in the next podcast after this one. I wanted to do this one first to kind of catch up on some stuff that I left over from the last show, and also just to get the word out that the Randy Gage interview was coming up, so people will be ready for that one and looking forward to it. And I think you'll find it very interesting. It was a very, I guess you would call it an atypical interview. Not a typical interview, atypical. It was unusual. I think you'll find it interesting. So but that'll be coming up next. We'll probably have that one produced here in the next few days. But for now, with no further delay, because I'm always late and go way over time and go off on too many tangents and don't cover all the information I want to cover, so I'm going to just jump right in here to the news. I actually was going to record this yesterday, actually, but of course, right after I say that, what do? I go off into a tangent. No, I had did way too much talking the last week and had a dinner meeting in a restaurant a couple of nights ago and lost my voice because afterwards we went to a bar there in one of the casinos, which it's interesting how the only thing that you would do in a place like this besides drink, I don't drink myself, I had root beers, but still, the only thing you would do besides that is talk. So they make the music as loud as they can possibly make it so you can't do the only other thing you'd want to do there besides drink. So I yelled basically for about an hour and a half and completely lost my voice. Now yesterday evening actually would have been a good time to do a podcast because I had a really good low radio voice going on. But it's kind of faded away and I'm back to normal. So let's jump right into this. I want to catch up a little bit about YTB Travel. A lot has been going on with him recently. The California case has been settled. For those of you catching up, California declared them an illegal pyramid scheme, a gigantic pyramid scheme. That was their exact words, the attorney general there. That was settled. I'll get into that in a little more detail in a minute. And, of course, right on the heels of that, literally just a few days later, their home state of Illinois sued them for being an illegal pyramid scheme, and that is currently underway. But it's really interesting how the company has spun all of this and how their distributors, their real diehard distributors, they've lost a lot of them, as I'll also get to in a little more detail here in a minute. But the ones that are hanging in there, and I hate this term, but what's being used is Kool-Aid drinkers. And it's, I think you know what the implication is. These are people who, like, regardless of what the facts are and what's going on out there, they're believing the company spin that just everything is wonderful, the company is better than ever, it's stronger than ever, and everything's going to be just fine, in spite of completely contradictory information that they're telling to investors in their public disclosures, because they're a publicly traded company. It's starting to remind me a lot of the old company Renaissance, or the tax people. This was a company where their home state in Kansas City, the Kansas AG, shut them down, put a temporary restraining order on them, eventually completely closed down the company. Michael Cooper, the founder and owner of the company at the time, is now in prison. And in fact, I testified against him in Kansas City at his criminal trial last year, but whatever that was, 2 years ago now, time flies. But anyway, when that temporary restraining order was slapped on them and they were shut down and this is all kind of being worked out, you know, he was going on national conference calls telling everybody it's just a misunderstanding. We're going to come back stronger than ever. We're going to get this cleared up any day now. And, of course, they were shut down for months and eventually a permanent injunction was issued against them and he and some other guys went to prison. But everybody was buying into it. I mean, literally, they were still doing opportunity meetings when the company was unable to accept applications or pay any commission checks. They had a temporary restraining order on them. So, and of course, after the company was formally and finally shut down, a lot of them kind of, you know, said, let's go to sit on the courthouse steps and we're going to do all these things to protest. They didn't, but because they believed that the company was just, you know, railroaded and it was so unjustified and whatever. And it was, as you can see from some of my old articles in the article section on my website back then, it was a pyramid scheme. I mean, it was a blatant pyramid scheme. So, I mean, I won't get into a lot of detail about that company, but you know, that's kind of happening now, the way the company's spinning it. Just for example, the case, the Illinois case that's going on right now, is not like California in that in California, I suppose you can survive without California, although that is a pretty big state. It's not like, you know, Rhode Island, where YTB was temporarily closed down a little while back because they were trying to license their distributors. They got over that, but this is California. pretty tough state to do without. And, of course, now they're claiming they're still open in California, which technically they are, but I'll get into more detail about what's going on there in a minute. But the point is, that's just sort of a leaf of the tree. Now, that's a big leaf, but when your home state's AG goes after you, that's kind of going after the root, or maybe a better analogy might be the head of the thing. So if your home state shuts you down, you're shut down pretty much in all 50 states. And so that's what's going on here. So this Illinois case actually has far greater implications and far more of an ominous possible outcome than what happened in California. And, of course, Illinois is also saying they're an illegal pyramid scheme as well. And they said in each of the counts, and there are two major counts against them there, there could be up to a $50,000 per violation penalty. This is what they're up against, plus legal fees, plus restitution to their distributors. But now only in Illinois, though. But as of the end of 2007, I think YTB had something like 5,700, what they call RTAs, in Illinois. So understand what that means. They could be charged, potentially, $50,000 per violation. That's $50,000 times 5,700 distributors on each of the two counts. If you do the math on that, that's over $500 million in potential penalties that they're looking at here. And even worse, the possibility of being completely shut down. And the three of the top senior management and founders of the company are also, this is what the Illinois AG is seeking, possibly going to be banned from network marketing, from ever pursuing one on a corporate level or investing in one or whatever. But I'll get to the details of that case in a minute as well, too. Right now, I just want to focus on just kind of how they're spinning this. This is coming straight from their website. Now, this isn't related to either of those two cases, but I'll give you an example of the typical YTB spin and how they kind of take some really bad news and they really try to make it sound like it's not such a big deal or even that it's a positive thing for them. It's amazing how they're doing this. Now, I'm quoting from their website now. This is a corporate website, not a distributor website. It says, according to the Better Business Bureau, YTB has a low number of complaints with favorable resolution rates, especially considering the high number of customers served. However, due to BBB practices, YTB will continue to have an unfavorable score until the pending litigation is resolved. Well, as we've discussed previously, YTB does not have a low number of complaints and a favorable resolution rate. In fact, of the top 100 network marketing companies, and if you go to the MarketWave website into the research links section, you'll find this chart down at the bottom there. There's a link to this chart of the top 100 network marketing companies, their Better Business Bureau grades and statistics on all of their complaints, including a formula that I do to come up with a resolution rating, giving weighted points to the various different levels of resolution. Of the top 100 network marketing companies, YTB Travel has the seventh most number of complaints, this is as of May 1st, of 103. And the average number of complaints, and by the way, this is over a three-year period, the previous 36 months, the average of the top 100 network marketing companies is 23.5. Okay, they've got 103. The average resolution rating is 61%. YTB's is 50%. So a significantly higher number of total complaints and a lower resolution percentage relative to other network marketing companies. Now, of course, YTB on their website compares their number of complaints to other online travel booking sites like Orbitz and other travel sites. And understand again, too, that this is why YTB is in trouble right now. Over 80% of their revenue comes from travel booking websites, sales aids and training, and marketing materials and things like that, not from the sale of travel. Over 80% of the commissions they pay back to the field comes from those travel booking websites, not from travel. So they are first and foremost a multi-level reseller of these travel websites, not a travel company. So I think they'd be most comparable to network marketing companies, not other travel booking websites. So relative to other network marketing companies, again, seventh most number of complaints, almost four times higher, actually more than four times higher than the average number of complaints per company with a lower resolution rate. So, but they've actually said on their website that they have a low number of complaints and a favorable resolution rate. They also make a big deal out of the fact that they're a DSA member, Direct Selling Association, and the DSA code expressly prohibits pyramid schemes. They went through their one-year probation period, and they got inducted into the DSA, which is interesting, too, because, I mean, I try really hard to support the DSA, and I really want to, but it's just things like this that just, they really make it tough sometimes. During that one-year probation period that all companies have to go through, by the way, when you join the DSA, this California AG investigation was ongoing, and the DSA surely should would have known that. yet still allow them to become a full-fledged member of the DSA. This reminds me back when I was in Longevity Network from about 95 to 03, and they were a DSA member, and I used to tell people all the time, you know, hey, Longevity, we're a DSA member, isn't that great? And a lot of times I would get this response was, well, so was Equinox, you know, and eventually so was Trek Alliance, both of which, by the way, were shut down by the Federal Trade Commission for being an illegal pyramid scheme after they were a member of the DSA, doing pretty much the same thing that they were doing when they were inducted into the DSA. So just being a member of the DSA doesn't necessarily mean you're not a pyramid scheme. In fact, it appears as if there's the possibility that YTB could be the third company closed down for being an illegal pyramid scheme who is a card-carrying active member of the DSA. That's a possibility here. Two times we know for sure that's happened. They also say, and I love their language here, this is again on the corporate website, that the California lawsuit alleges improper business operations. That's their spin on it. It alleges improper business operations. It's that's still there today, by the way, even though it's over and they were called a gigantic pyramid scheme. That's a quote from the Attorney General. And the Attorney General, as you'll see in the press release I'm about to read, still refers to them as a pyramid scheme. But according to YTB, there was just alleged improper business practices. They also say that the settlement calls for, quote, certain modifications, end quote, to YTB's marketing plan. Certain modifications of their marketing plan. We'll talk about what those modifications are in a second as well. And again, one of their top reps who puts up a website that tries to give you all the quote-unquote facts about what's really going on with YTB says that, I'm quoting, California tried for 9 months to shut down YTB and they failed, all capitals as 3 exclamation points. Well, it's true that technically they're still in business in California, but I'm going to read from the press release that the Attorney General of California put out, and this is straight, again, from the Attorney General's office concerning the settlement in California. And we'll see if this was just certain modifications about alleged improper business operations. Brown ends YTB online travel pyramid scheme. That's the headline of the press release. Brown, by the way, referring to Jerry Brown, the Attorney General of California. Goes on to say, bringing an end to an, quote, elaborate pyramid scheme, Attorney General Edmund G. Brown, Jr. today completed an agreement forcing YTB International to stop the deceptive marketing of its largely unprofitable travel websites, prohibiting the company from charging customers nearly $500 to recruit others into the endless chain scheme. So nowhere, does it say, we settled and we were wrong, they weren't really a pyramid. He's still saying that's what they were. By the way, I'm not quoting the whole press release here, just some of the more pertinent points. And I'm quoting again, today's settlement ends YTB's pyramid scheme by arming consumers with hard facts and eliminating the need to sign up for this largely unprofitable website. This, by the way, was August 7th, 2008, was when the lawsuit was originally filed. This was May 14th of this press release. They list a bunch of bullet points about how they accomplished this, and one of them says, prohibiting the company from charging nearly $500 to recruit others into the scheme and requiring that new member recruitment be done using a free online demonstration. It also says it's going to limit the income from downstream members. That's the AG's language. Of course, that means limit the income you can earn from downline members and eliminating perks and other incentives for joining. Well, still kind of ambiguous. I mean, are they really saying that they're stopping them from paying commissions on these websites? Remember, that's the bulk of the revenue and the bulk of the commissions paid. Over 80% of it comes from these websites, but it doesn't really say that they're not doing it. It's still kind of gray, but let's go on. I'm quoting again, many signed up to sell travel or to obtain travel discounts, but they quickly found it virtually impossible to make money selling travel. A plane ticket from Los Angeles to New York, for instance, would only yield $3 in profit. An international ticket from San Francisco to London would net only $6 in profit. Well, I'm not really sure what travel agent Jerry Brown uses, but a San Francisco to London ticket, wouldn't that be at least $1,000? And I know that YTB gets about 5% of that in commission, of which they use 60% of that to pay commissions to distributors. In other words, distributors get about 3% of it. So that'd be about $30. I don't know where they're getting the six, but Los Angeles to New York for $3, actually that would probably be about $6. But the point is still valid, even though they're exaggerating this obviously very low, is that there's very little money in the actual travel, their point being that money was made in selling the $450 websites. The press release goes on to say, by contrast, as I've just said, recruiting others to purchase websites and having those purchasers recruit others to purchase websites and so on was much more profitable. Members earned money based on how many websites they sold, as well as how many websites those they recruited sold. These multi-level sales, combined with the required purchase of the $449.95 website, form the foundation of YTP's pyramid scheme. Well, it sounds like they're definitely not liking that concept, but they still haven't actually said you can't pay commissions on it anymore. Let's go on. Some of the things that, again, the AG is going now to prohibit YTP from doing would be, for example, charging customers money in order to recruit others. Okay, still not 100% sure here. Let's go on. Significantly limiting how much people can make from individuals they have recruited and who have become recruiters themselves. 60% of recruiter sales must come from persons who are not themselves recruiters. Otherwise, their income will be reduced. Doesn't say eliminated, now it says reduced. But notice, 60% of recruiter sales must come from persons who are not themselves recruiters. They're not distributors. They're not people trying to build the business. It's also prohibiting YTB from providing any recruitment bonuses or compensation based on the recruiter's purchase of a website. There it is. Near the end of the two-page press release, but there it is. YTB can no longer pay commissions on the sale of the website. So that should end once and for all any controversy about whether or not YTB can still multi-level the sale of these travel booking websites in the state of California, right? There it is in crystal clear, plain English, right there in black and white, says you can't do it. Well, as usual, it's not that simple. Because apparently, the state of California, Attorney General's office, at least whoever writes their press releases, has been doing a little spinning of their own. What is actually said in the final judgment and permanent injunction against YTB in California is a little bit different than what they're saying in their press release. And I'll just focus specifically on how the compensation plan works here and what they're being required to do. In the actual language of the injunction, it says, defendants shall not create, maintain, or offer any incentive, monetary or otherwise, for a website seller to become a website owner. Defendants shall not create, maintain, or offer any incentive, monetary or otherwise, for a website owner to become a website seller. So you can own the website and just book travel through it and make a few little dollars off of all of your travel, you know, the menial part of the income opportunity here. If you just want that website just to book travel through, not to resell the website and make all that money, you know, where 80% of the revenue and 80% of the commissions came from, if you don't want to get involved with any of that, you just want the website to send people to book travel through and make a few bucks, you could be a website owner. But they can't offer any financial incentive for those people to become website sellers. But they can still have in California website sellers. Okay, well, can the website sellers multi-level this product? Well, they do go on to say, contrary to what they say in their press release, under the website sellers compensation section, defendants shall not pay a website seller any compensation other than a single $50 flat fee for each website sold, payable only to the website seller who sold the website. So you can sell it on like a direct sales basis, sort of a single level basis, kind of like an affiliate program or something. But they go on, unless and until the website seller has made three sales of the website owner opportunity. So there's the first criteria. They can earn this $50 selling the website, just the website, as long as they find at least three people that just want the website. They don't want to resell the website. Again, they don't want to participate in that 80-80 part of the comp plan. Okay, they just want the website. They can find three of those people, they can earn this $50. But they go on even further. They go on to talk about the multi-level aspect of the selling of the website. They actually go on to say that for the person to continue to be able to earn this income from selling of the website, not only do they have to find three people that don't want anything other than the website, they don't want to resell the website, but they also have to maintain at least 60% of the sales volume of all of the sites that they sell have to go to people that just want the website. Okay, they don't have any interest in reselling the website and participating in all those huge bonuses in selling the website. So they got to find three people that just want the website, they don't want to resell the website, and 60% of their personal sales of all the websites have to go to people that just want the website. California goes on to say, in spite of what they say in their press release, that they can still also earn multi-level commissions on the sale of the website. That's actually technically still allowed in California, but under very restrictive conditions. Essentially, the same thing. I'm quoting from the injunction here. Defendants may pay a website seller compensation based on the website seller's total downline sales volume, but only under the same two conditions, that they find at least three people that only want the website and at least 60% of their entire downline volume is made up of people that only want the website. They don't want to resell their website. So imagine this is kind of like, you know, many years ago there was a company called Jewelway, and Jewelway used to sell jewelry. And people would buy thousands of dollars worth of jewelry so they could qualify multiple positions in their binary compensation plan. They were eventually closed down for being a pyramid scheme, and they also received an injunction and the smoke cleared, and they were allowed back in business, but under very restrictive conditions. Specifically, 50% of their jewelry sales had to go to people that just wanted jewelry, who were not distributors in the compensation plan. And of course, then they died a natural death of attrition because the vast majority of income was from the big front loads of jewelry to people who were signing up in the program to qualify for all of their positions. So again, in YTB here, what California is saying is, look, you can go ahead and sell this website, this travel booking website, and you can even pay multi-level commissions on it, as long as you demonstrate that there are actually people that just want the website. They're not buying the website because they have to qualify to make money selling websites. So as long as you, as a distributor, has three people that just want the website and at least 60% of their downline volume just want the website, they don't want to resell the website, then they can do that. By the way, if they don't meet those qualifications, I think the way as I read this, their commissions are still possible, but capped at 40% of what they would have been. So they really cut down the amount of income that you can make. So California is essentially saying, look, you got to sell websites to people who actually want websites, you know, which is, for all intents and purposes, I believe, still going to kill their business in California, because, of course, the vast majority, if not practically everyone, was buying the website so they can make money selling the website, not selling travel through the website, as their numbers indicate. 80% of their commissions came from the sale of the website, not travel. Now, that's getting essentially, for all intents and purposes, wiped out in California unless the large majority of people are not interested in reselling the website, participating in that end of the deal. What's really kind of sad is, again, these really diehard supporters of YTB Travel that's still hanging in there, and they're putting up their blogs, and they're trying to spin everything the best possible way that they can. I saw this one guy, seems like a nice guy, and he's just really kind of blinded and, I think, delusional as to what's going on with this company here. But he actually made the claim that, because in YTB's disclosures, they talk about how 80% of the people, I think it was 80, might have been 70, some huge percentage, didn't sell a single website, didn't sell a single travel booking website last year, and that was indicative of the fact that the vast majority of people don't want to resell their website. They just wanted the website so they could send some friends through it, make a few bucks getting their little travel commissions through it. That's probably not why 70 or 80% of the people didn't make a single sale. I think they probably intended to, and they just failed at it. You know, it's not because they just want the website. Again, who would just want the website to make a few bucks sending some travel bookings through it when the vast majority of income was made by multi-level marketing the website? So they are technically allowed to do that still in California, but under conditions in which it's going to be so difficult and so unattractive to do that, for all intents and purposes, they are still basically, I think, as a network marketing opportunity, probably going to be pretty much dead in California, and it's going to be a tough state to survive without. So getting back to the press release, and I'm concluding here, in filings with the SEC, YTB stated that there is, quote, substantial doubt about the company's ability to continue as a going concern, end quote. Keep that in mind. That'll be important here coming up. Quoting again from the AG's press release, the number of internet websites sold decreased 75% in the first quarter of 2009 compared to the first quarter of 2008. So 75% drop in the number of websites sold, and the total number of website owners was almost cut in half, slightly more than cut in half, beginning of 2009 compared to the first quarter of 2008. So it sounds like the company is dropping quickly. So it doesn't look good for YTB Travel. Well, let's go on to the Illinois lawsuit. Let's see what they're actually saying. And I'm holding a copy of that complaint in my hand right now. It says, defendants are promoting a classic pyramid scheme. Well, at least in Illinois, they called them a classic pyramid scheme, as opposed to California, where they called them a gigantic pyramid scheme. At least here, they're classic. The lawsuit also goes on to say, as of approximately March 31st, 2008, would be just at the end of the first quarter of 2008, defendants Lloyd Tomer, Scott Tomer, and Kim Sorensen, those are the three of the top corporate leaders and founders of the company, had increased their base salary from $134,832 to $325,000 and scheduled their salaries to increase in increments of $25,000 for each successive year of their employment agreements. Now, that's Illinois' AG is stating that in their lawsuit. Now, if a company is a very large, successful company, these actually, of course, for top senior management are pretty low salaries. So, you know, there are CEOs of large million-dollar companies out there that, of course, make millions of dollars a year. So I'm not knocking the total amount, but I am questioning, as apparently Illinois is here, the about 2.5 times increase in salary right after the first quarter of 08, considering the first quarter of 08 would have been the first quarter of 13 consecutive quarters in which the company grew that it didn't grow. That streak ended right after the first quarter of 08. They started to go back down. Remember, this was way before the California action took place or any of that kind of stuff. So their sales had just started to drop, and their liabilities, their debt, had reached almost $50 million, the highest on record in the company's history, and had increased steadily up to that point, and that was its peak. It's a bad time to increase your salary by 2.5 times. But anyway, since that time, by the way, their total number of assets has dropped steadily, and they're roughly about half the size they were now. Not sales, I'm talking about the assets, the infrastructure of the company. About half the size now they were as the first quarter in 08. But the thing that really kind of disturbs me is that as the management of the company, you would think that you know, something would have to do with, you know, getting the company into profitability, which it rarely has done. The company has lost millions of dollars, and in most quarters is unprofitable. But their general and administrative expenses, for those of you not really into accounting and SEC disclosures and stuff like that, kind of hang in with me or just fast forward it. But general and administrative expenses, kind of like, you know, in layman's terms, maybe your overhead, what you pay to kind of run the company. Well, that amount, which has been, by the way, starting in, including 2004 to the last quarter, first quarter of this year, $131 million. That's almost one-third of their total sales. In the first quarter of this year, their general administrative expenses was 51.6% of sales. Now, to put that in perspective, because understand, too, this is a company that is primarily virtual. It's done over the internet. Okay, there aren't a lot of hard goods. There isn't an inventory of dozens or hundreds of products that need to be shipped and inventoried and produced. There's no international markets to have to handle. It's a U.S.-based product that's almost entirely online, done automatically by computers. Not everything, of course, but far more than most conventional network marketing companies. Okay, the general administrative expenses should be much lower than other companies. Well, Nu Skin, with their large product line, their international markets, everything going on with them, for the last 5 years, they've averaged 30.2% of sales, lower than YDB Travel. Herbalife, 31.2%. Again, lower in general administrative expenses as a percentage of sales than YDB Travel. Avon, remember, YDB, first quarter of this year, general administrative expenses, 51.6% of sales. Avon, in 2008, was 50.5%. Avon had a lower percentage of general administrative expenses as opposed to sales, and they've got dozens, I think hundreds of products now that they have to inventory and produce and ship, and they're in 66 total countries. They have massive overhead, and yet their percentage of sales was less than YTB Travel. How does this company spend so much money to run their company when it's mostly done over computers? Maybe it has something to do with things like spending, allegedly, I've heard, $1 million for a giant styrofoam Statue of Liberty to display at their national convention, which, of course, right afterwards, they gave away. $1 million for something like that, used one time, so everybody can clap and go ooh and aw at it, and then that's it. It's done. It goes away. Maybe expenses like that might have something to do with it. But let's go on. Again, I'm quoting from the Illinois lawsuit here. In one of the counts, they're asking the court for this. Preliminarily and permanently enjoining defendants, either individually or in concert with others, from advertising, selling, offering for sale, or promoting any multi-level marketing plan or pyramid scheme, or accepting money or other things of value from people for the same. Again, they're trying to ban the defendants, the top three guys in the company, from ever being involved in network marketing again. And there's precedent for this. FutureNet was a company in California that was hit a few years ago where the founders and the owners of the company were, in fact, as part of the permanent injunction, they were banned for life from network marketing. So apparently they're going for the same thing here. So that's straight from the two different lawsuits. Now, let's look at a letter that was written by Scott Tomer, one of the defendants in that case, one of the co-founders of the company, and Andy Coffin, who's also another member of senior management, not named in that Illinois lawsuit, by the way, but senior management. They've both written open letters to the public and to distributors concerning all of this. In Scott Tomer's letter, he says that his critics, the critics of YTB, I don't know if that includes me, I think mostly he's talking about other travel vendors and things like that, they are, quote, small-minded people with hidden agendas. Yeah, there are some aggressive competitors out there that are overstating a lot of this, which is hard to do because it's, you know, it's hard to overstate what's going on right now because it's pretty bad. But their spin on it is really to the other side, as you're about to see, and I'm trying to just tell you what that truth is in the middle here. Mr. Tomer goes on to say, and I'm quoting, "We recently emerged from a dark cloud of suspicion about our future when we settled the California Attorney General lawsuit." We emerged from a dark cloud of suspicion about our future when they settled that lawsuit. By the way, this would be on their website today after the Illinois lawsuit was already in play. So they're under another dark cloud they're not mentioning here. While some have reported the end of YTB, we believe it is the beginning of the next phase, one that will prove our resilience, determination, and ultimate success. Well, here's an interesting thing that kind of gets into some SEC issues. Remember I said earlier in their annual disclosures, the 10-K they call it, to investors, they've stated that they have a concern about YTB's ability to continue as a going concern. They've got to be truthful and honest about that to investors. But here they're telling their distributors what appears to be exactly the opposite, which is also a public disclosure to investors. Now, granted, at the end of this, they do put in a little SEC disclosure about what they call forward-looking statements, but nonetheless, they're essentially completely contradicting what they've said in the 10-K. So it'd be interesting to see how that might play out. But he goes on to say, and I'm quoting, "Your disdain for us," again he's talking about the critics, "is abundantly clear, and you have proven you will stoop to the lowest levels in your attempt to harm us. We believe the agreement with the state of California improves our business model, and that as a result, YTB will emerge a better company." Well, wait a minute. If this improves your business model, why did you battle California for 18 months, I think over that? Why didn't you just do it? It improves your company. Okay, it makes you, you emerge as a better company. Well, why did you even have to wait for California to ask you to do this then? You know, these changes that they've made. And how, in God's name, is this improving your business model by wiping out 80% of your revenue and 80% of your commissions that you're going to earn in the largest state that you do business in? He goes on to say, "This agreement will help to further secure the future of our valued sales force." By hacking off 80% of their commissions in that largest state, I'm not sure how that improves the business model at all, but that's how they're spinning it. He goes on to say, "The improvements we will be making are comparable with the upcoming franchise model while maintaining the commissions and override structure for our reps," yeah, except for in California. Mr. Coffin, in his letter, says, "There's never been a statue erected to a critic." No, but there's been a million-dollar styrofoam statue erected to the Statue of Liberty, which I get to be critical of. And he goes on to say, "Critics have a motive. No one criticizes just to criticize. They are paid something. It's a self-indulgent motive. They are looking to build their own business, receive attention, fill an ego, gain monetarily, and or primarily call attention to their self-importance." Or they could just be some guy who's doing a podcast trying to get the truth out. Which, by the way, this kind of smacks of what they kind of taught me in debate class in college, that if you have a really weak argument and you don't have a whole lot to counter your opponent's argument, this is what my instructor actually said, and I'll never forget it. He said, "If you can't diminish quality and credibility of your opponent's argument, try to diminish the quality and credibility of your opponent as a last resort." Now, isn't that what they're doing here? Rather than actually counter, by the way, several times in these letters they'll say things like, you know, "We don't want to counter anything that they've said specifically. You know, if you lie in bed with pigs, you're going to get muddy," or whatever their little terms are. They have all these excuses for whether they're not going to actually counter what their critics say, but they're going to try to diminish the quality and credibility of their actual critics instead. I wonder why. And finally, he goes on to say, and the irony of this statement is profound and I think speaks for itself, so I'll just leave it at this. Mr. Coffin says that critics spin in a way to support their point of view and attempt to make themselves look better. I think both sides might do that. Let's move on. Some of you may recall a couple of years ago, a Fox affiliate in the LA area, KTTV, I believe it is. Their website is myfoxla.com. Did a kind of an expose on ACN, not very positive report on them. And then just a few weeks ago, they did one on YTB Travel. And it wasn't so much that, obviously, I disagreed with their negative portrayal of YTB Travel, but I did not really care for the way they introduced the segment. And they actually introduced it by the woman there in the studio who kicked it over, you know, to the guy who actually did the report. Her quote was, "Hundreds of multi-level marketing companies make their money by recruiting more and more unsuspecting members." So I actually wrote a letter to the producer of the show there at KTTV Fox 11 in Los Angeles, and I explained to them that, actually, in one sense, I was kind of supportive of YTB. I said, you know, when you're going around the event that you sent the secret, you know, undercover guy into and try to get everybody to talk to you on camera, you implied that they wouldn't do that because they were being deceptive and evasive. Actually, they probably didn't do that because it's against YTB and most network marketing companies' policies to speak to the media without the company's permission, and it's a terminatable offense. So, actually, I kind of supported them a little bit on that angle. But then I also went on to say, although overall I might agree with your opinion that this company is indicative of a pyramid scheme, which is how they were portrayed, it really wasn't fair to kind of throw the whole network marketing industry under the bus. And this is not indicative of what network marketing companies do typically. And that my comment was in my letter, a lot of pyramid schemes try to disguise themselves as legitimate network marketing companies in their attempt to appear legal and legitimate. That's why they do it. And didn't think much would happen from it, but I actually got a call to my home office here from the producer of the show, from the producer of the segment. And she was very nice. Heidi, I don't know if she didn't give me permission to mention her name or anything, but if she's listening, I thank her very much for doing this. She was very candid with me. She was even apologetic. She said, I understand where you're coming from. She interviewed me then about an upcoming segment they were doing on World Ventures, another network marketing travel deal. Now, originally, they brought a camera crew in, or actually I went in to see their camera crew here at their local affiliate in Las Vegas, to shoot just a few sound bites of my saying something to the effect that this isn't how all network marketing companies operate, and sometimes companies try to disguise themselves as legitimate MLM companies because we're legitimate. That's why they're doing that. Well, of course, all of that hit the cutting room floor, and just a couple of quick little sound bites that were negative about World Ventures is what made it on the air. But if you want to go to, again, it's myfoxla.com and look up World Ventures and do a little search there, you can see my little 5 seconds of at least local LA fame. But the point is that at least I was successful by writing the letter and getting them to not throw the whole MLM industry under the bus, because in that segment, at least what was accomplished was nowhere did they say this was indicative of what all network marketing companies do. They didn't introduce it by some negative comment implying that we make more and more money by recruiting unsuspecting members and that kind of stuff. So, hey, mission accomplished. Also kind of shows, too, that, you know, writing letters and writing little comments at the bottom of these articles you see online, they can have an effect. I mean, people do read them, and sometimes you find a good, conscientious, professional producer of a show, like Heidi, who will listen and want to learn and create a better, more accurate report. So the oral sprays are back. We talked about this a little bit on the last show, but I just want to recap this again real quick. CareMore spray vitamins. They were around several years ago. This is the ones where you have the oral sprays where you spray it in your mouth and it's like 90% absorbed, where if you just put a drop of liquid on your tongue, it's 80% absorbed, which of course is ridiculous because once the spray hits the surface of your mouth, it's just as much liquid as if you dropped it there. But I've heard rumors, don't know if this is true, that CareMore spray vitamins may be coming back. Mayer Labs, who still sells them, by the way, retail online, not MLM anymore. I don't know if they're going to be involved in it, but they might be coming back. Of course, there was the Biogevity product from New Ways. There was Alive Max. Now, not Max and not Alive. Those are two other network marketing companies. This is one now called Alive Max. In fact, there's two companies with Max in their name. CyberWise also has spray vitamins now as well, too. And by the way, I had a very interesting and lengthy interview with Mark McCool, the CEO of CyberWise, as an aside here, and he will be coming on the show at some point in the future to kind of tell his side of the story about what happened with the terminations and suspensions and so forth. But it was interesting in that apparently he inherited, when he came back recently to take control of the company, the spray vitamin products, and he brought up a lot of the same concerns I'm about to bring up, even before I brought them up to him. I mean, he seemed to be very sincere in that he had the same concerns that I'm having, which I thought was kind of enlightening, which is my little pun and segue into Enlighten, and Trivita, by the way, too. Trivita now has a sublingual B12, which they say flat out is it absorbs sublingually, under the tongue, or through the buccal membrane, or between your cheek and gum. But Enlighten is the one I think that I'm really most concerned about. And by the way, I've attempted to contact the parent company. I've contacted Enlighten in several different ways. I've tried to get their response to this, and they don't want to respond. So I've given them every chance in the world, so I'm going forward with this, even though if you're in Enlighten right now, you're not going to like it. And this is probably going to be one of those situations again, too, by the way, where I'm going to go forward with this. I'm going to tell you everything that I know about their product and why it's probably, in my opinion, going to get hit by the FDA and why. And then I'll probably get a letter from their legal department telling me that everything I said was wrong and, you know, I should fix it. And then I'll write them back and say, why didn't you do that before I said it? Anyway, you can't sell a dietary supplement that's absorbed sublingually. Or transdermally, by the way. That's why every diet patch product in the history of network marketing is gone, and most of them have been shut down. If your product is absorbed through the skin, whether it be your shoulder or under your tongue or between your cheek and gum or whatever, sublingual, transdermally, it cannot be considered a dietary supplement. The FDA is very clear on this. They've issued several warning letters. I've seen the actual regulations at the FDA, or the actual sections of the regulation. They're very, very clear and specific on this. And by the way, these companies, or specifically Enlighten, has been sent all of this. It says that if your product is intended for ingestion through the digestive system, the stomach, the intestines, that's how it's absorbed, then you can be a dietary supplement. Any other thing, it creates a dichotomy here, if it's absorbed any other way than through ingestion, okay, it is not a dietary supplement by their classification. By the way, I'm not saying this is right or I agree with it, and some of it's kind of loopy to me. I'm just the messenger, all right? But the FDA says not a dietary supplement. It, in fact, would probably be considered an unapproved new drug, and it is not protected by DSHEA, the 1994 Act, in which allowed us to make structure function claims about our products, not medical claims, but supports joint health or improves the immune system, things like that. We can say those kind of things. You can't even say those kind of things if it's not a dietary supplement, and it wouldn't be if it's absorbed transdermally or sublingually. So to relieve any doubt, because by the way, I did, through an intermediary, get one short response from Enlighten about this, and their response was they're not concerned about any of this stuff that I'd sent because it is... by the way, a little tip for you guys who want to do public speaking and do podcasts, don't take a swig of a carbonated beverage right before you begin a segment of one. You think I would have learned that by now. But anyway, their response was it was incidentally ingested. After you stick their little strip between your cheek and gum and it absorbs, you will swallow the residual liquid that's left over. And that goes through your digestive system. That was their response. So I wrote the FDA and the contact that I have there that has helped me with other things in the past, and that would be Robert J. Moore, Ph.D. Dr. Moore is the supervisor of the Regulations Implementation Team, Division of Dietary Supplement Programs, Office of Nutrition, Labeling, and Dietary Supplement, Center for Food Safety and Applied Nutrition, U.S. Food and Drug Administration. What that all means is he is the supervisor of the exact spot within the FDA where they decide who gets a warning letter. All right, so it's straight to the source, right in the center, at the heart of the FDA's office in Maryland. Now, by the way, I didn't mention the name of the product or that it was a strip or anything. My intention is never to tell on a company or whatever. But I did describe if something is said to be absorbed between the cheek and gum or sublingually and then incidentally swallowed afterwards, would that still cause it to be considered a dietary supplement? Here is the exact response from the FDA. I'm quoting. The attached letter sets forth FDA's position that a product intended for oral absorption falls outside of the definition of a dietary supplement. The fact that some might be incidentally swallowed after the fact would not change our conclusion that such a product is not a dietary supplement. End quote. The attached letter, by the way, was a sample warning letter where they said this very thing. It was a non-MLM company that was selling a sublingual tablet, I think a melatonin product, where they said if it's ingested after it's absorbed through the mouth, it's still not a dietary supplement. That was the same FDA warning letter, by the way, that I sent as an example to Enlighten Corporate and their parent company as well. So they're perfectly aware of this at this point. And by the way, this is really just changing their marketing campaign. What they've got to say now is it's just a more convenient way to use your product, to take your vitamins. You know, it's not that they've got to stop selling the product, but they've got to dramatically change the way that they're marketing it. And a lot of the YouTube videos and a lot of the distributor websites where they specifically tout the advantages of avoiding the digestive tract, They've really got to crack down on those and eliminate those as quickly as possible. Now, having said that, again, when the FDA does take action, when they discover these companies, there's no rhyme or reason to it. It could be tomorrow. It could be 20 years from now. But the analogy I use here is it's kind of like playing Russian roulette, and there's 10,000 barrels in the gun and one bullet. And every morning you wake up, you point the gun to your head, and you pull the trigger, it doesn't fire, you make $1 million. So you could play that game for years, you know, make a lot of money. But it's simply a matter of when, not if, the number is going to come up. So all of these companies, and there's newer companies I've seen starting up with sprays and some lingual strips, and inevitably there's going to be diet patches again or patch products. Just remember, folks, anything that's sublingual, transdermal, if it goes into the body in any other way than primarily, in fact it should be almost exclusively, to the digestive tract, the FDA does not consider it to be a dietary supplement. Right? So on the same lines, there's also a company called Cal Nutrisciences, and again, I've written the company. I've given them a week to respond. They've chosen not to, so not going to beg them. So here's what I found. They will claim in their, I'm quoting here from some of their advertisements. This is on their website. We've seen an average of 7.7 pounds of weight loss in a four-week study, and the participants were asked not to adjust their lifestyle. Okay, no change to their diet or exercise. Another quote, is there a secret to losing weight? Yes, and it isn't just about diet and exercise. So they've got some other way to do it. They go on to say, what if there was a way to help increase the calories out without jogging on a treadmill or taking a high-impact aerobic class? In other words, you can do it without changing your exercise routine, without additional exercise. What if you could eat all 500 calories from a cheeseburger and eliminate 25% of those calories with no more exercise than using salt or pepper? Still quoting, enjoy the same food but still lose weight. With Cheat, that's the name of their product, you can eat food you love. In a successful clinical study, there was no behavior modification. In other words, no diet, no exercise, end quote. Losing weight can be that simple as only taking their product. Now, again, another quote, whether your favorite food is pizza, pasta, burgers, or burritos, Cheat will work for you. An email ad that I received said study participants lost an average of 8 pounds in 30 days without changing their diet. A display ad, big full-page display ad I saw, said, would you rather run on a treadmill for an hour or sprinkle something on your pizza? Also said, lose 8 to 16 pounds per month without dieting. Here's the problem with all of this. The FDA and the FTC have both declared very clearly and specifically, and by the way, there's links to this in the email announcement to this podcast. So those of you listening to this who don't subscribe to the MarketWave Alerts, where you can get the supplementary information and the documentation for a lot of the stuff I'm talking about, go to MarketWaveInc.com and sign up for the alerts. But right there, it's very clear that not only can you not make a claim that your product, your dietary supplement, can cause you to lose weight without any change to your diet or exercise routine, they even specifically discuss fat absorbers, products that claim to absorb fat from your food that you eat so you absorb less calories. It goes directly to that. The FTC is the one they got to be most concerned with here, because the FTC is the one that cares about whether or not what you're saying is truthful. Can you back it up? And even if you can, again, there is no question. You cannot say, even if you can prove it's true, and that's why some of this is kind of screwy, that your product can cause you to lose weight without any change to your diet or exercise routine. A great case study is Calorad. Some of you veterans of MLM may remember this back in the 90s. Calorad was this one where their headline was, lose weight while you sleep. They had an import ban eventually put on them by the FDA, and they were considered a drug because of that claim, because if you claim that you can take a pill and cause you to lose weight with any change to your diet or exercise routine, they said that means you're a drug. So Calorad had an import ban put on them because they claimed you could just lose weight by just taking their product. So again, there's tons of precedent on this. You just can't make that claim. There's also another company, Asante. Now, I'm bringing them up because I got a press release, and this appears to be from the company, not an over-aggressive distributor here. I don't cite because, you know, that's not always the distributor's or the company's responsibility. But this appears to be a corporate communication, May 12th, from Scottsdale. A nutraceutical company releases new product that could help in fighting off viruses. Okay, the headline is a blatant medical claim. And I'm quoting from it here that this main ingredient in their product assists the body's ability to rid itself of harmful bacteria, counteracts the overuse of antibiotics, which kill the good bacteria as well as the bad in the body, and therefore increases vulnerability to disease. They also say, with swine flu in the news and fear of an epidemic, It is more important than ever to take care of your health and strengthen your immune system. Here are a few facts about swine flu people need to know. Now, when you start talking about swine flu in the middle of your press release about your product, okay, the net impression or the implication, and those are the terms used by the FDA and FTC, is that you are saying your product somehow helps in the prevention or treatment of the swine flu, right? Obviously, otherwise, why would they be including this in their press release? And this is all right after, again, talking about how their products, helps rid the body of harmful bacteria. Yeah, that's a medical claim. Go to a document called Dietary Supplements and Advertising Guide for Industry. There's a link to it, again, in the research section of my website, markwaveinc.com, and read that. And it's just crystal clear. It's in black and white. These would be considered disease treatment claims. By the way, anyone familiar with Robert Tilton? Remember the preacher that's on TV that got exposed by, I think it was 2020 or 60 Minutes or somebody a few years ago, because he was supposed to be, you know, praying over all these prayer requests, but they would just take the money out and they found all the prayer requests in the dumpster behind his building. And, you know, that guy, you might see him at 3 o'clock in the morning sometimes. He's the one that makes all the faces and is really animated and speaks in tongues a lot. Success in Life Ministries, I think it's called. Well, he's back again. He's back in the news because he's trying to make a comeback there in Florida. I actually met his ex-wife at one time. She has some interesting stories to tell about him. But what I didn't know from this article that I had read about him coming back was that he had started a network marketing company. It's called Stella Vita. And this company is, I think, about 3 years old. And I'd heard about it for the very first time when I just read this article about him trying to make a comeback in the televangelist business. Well, how well is Stella Vita doing? Well, I research and analyze companies full-time for a living. Every time I hear of a company, I always look it up. I bookmark it. I try to become conversant in every company that's out there that's, you know, at least more than a few months old. I can't keep up all of them, of course. There's over 2,000 companies, and the bottom two-thirds change over like every 90 days. The fact I heard about them for the very first time after being in business for 3 years was last week when I read this article. Probably gives you a pretty good idea of how well they're doing. But anyway, yeah, he's in the MLM business. You know what? I'm going to go ahead and take a quick break here, especially since my throat's starting to hurt again. And when we come back, I'm going to get into the rant zone, get into all the stuff that we didn't get into on the last show, the segment I called Scam School, some more interesting MLM ignorance stuff to talk about. And another interesting email I got from Andrew Cass, one of our pro anti-MLM zealots. So we'll do that when we get back after a quick 2-minute break. See you on the other side.
Since 1992, TeleCenter has been the ultimate lead capture and communication tool for direct sales professionals. TeleCenter is a toll-free number you will use in all of your advertising to provide 24/7 recorded information about your company, products, and opportunity. As prospects listen to the pre-recorded messages, the system pre-qualifies them for you and then instantly notifies you via text, phone, and email. The constant flow of fresh, qualified leads will drive momentum into your business. TeleCenter even captures every caller's phone number, their name and address when available, serves as a 24/7 fax system, provides a 25-user conference bridge, an ad tracker to define your best advertising responses, and so much more. With a simple flat rate price, over 35 included features, and no service contract, TeleCenter is the right choice for successful direct sellers. Learn more and sign up online now by going to www.telecentersignup.com/marketwave or by finding the TeleCenter banner in the MLM resources section of marketwaveinc.com.
If you've ever had the opportunity to sit down one-on-one for an hour with a top leader in your company, you know how incredibly valuable that was. You probably look back on that as the turning point in your career. Now, what if you could do that with dozens of experts and the top leaders from the very best companies in all of direct sales? That's what you get with the Mastermind Sessions. How much? $1 a week. Only $52 a year, that's all. Well, one more thing. When you read something or watch a DVD, even a YouTube video, you've got to stop everything and just do that. But with an audio, you can be driving to the bank, doing the dishes, working out on the Stairmaster, or deleting unwanted emails, and you're learning. You're turning wasted time into productive time, growing your business by growing yourself. Get your subscription at www.themastermindsessions.com.
Welcome back to Inside Network Marketing. This is Len Clements, and this is the second half of the show where we do what's called the rant zone. And if I've got the voice for it, I'll try to complete everything, even though we're going to go obviously way over an hour again. Just another quick comment, just kind of following up on the Robert Tilton thing. Kind of hesitated to mention this before, but I think I'm going to go ahead and do it, because if you really want a good laugh, and I'm not really into sophomoric humor, but in this case, very rarely in my life have I laughed so hard that it literally physically hurt, like I couldn't inhale. Go to a website called fartingpreacher.org and just see what they've done with some of his televised sermons. And it also will remind you who Robert Tilton is. It is hilarious. I mean, some of them are you just got to see it. Fartingpreacher.org. If you're offended by that kind of humor, don't do it. But otherwise, check it out. It's absolutely sensational. Andrew Cass. Remember, on the last show, we talked about pro-anti-MLM zealots like Ann Sieg and Andrew Cass, these people that put out all these advertisements and these big banners talking about how horrible network marketing is in an effort to sell you a network marketing opportunity or network marketing tools, which now everybody's copying because apparently they've been somewhat successful at it. So everybody's trying to do what they're doing. So practically every Google ad you see when you look up something online has all these headlines that are like the antithesis of what you'd want them to be for someone promoting the industry. Well, Andrew Cass has done it again. In fact, I think he's topped himself. In an email I got from him on the 13th of this month, May, he says, CNN recently delivered a major blow to the MLM industry with a recent article titled How Multilevel Marketing Cheats at All Levels. He goes on to say, the article talks about how many major countries have banned MLM. Many countries have banned MLM. The United States Congress has been considering this for years, and it's even closer to becoming a reality now with this devastating article, okay, by CNN, remember. He goes on to say, you've now been presented with a very real solution to the MLM meltdown that is now underway in the U.S. Did CNN write an article called How Multilevel Marketing Cheats at All Levels? Well, the article actually appeared online at IBNLive.com. IBNLive.com is the online arm of GBN. GBN, Global Broadcast News, is a division of Network 18. Network 18 has joined in partnership with Turner International, which owns CNN. So Network 18, a news agency in India, has partnered with Turner International to help provide news content for their news network. And this article again appeared on the online arm of GBN, which is a division of Network 18, which is in partnership with Turner International, which owns CNN. That's the CNN connection. Okay, let's go back. Let me reread the headline of Andrew Cass's email. CNN recently delivered a major blow to the MLM industry with this recent article. And the article talks about how many major countries have actually banned MLM. The United States Congress is considering it. It's now closer to doing it since CNN's written this article. Complete and utter crap, as usual, which is pretty much all that comes from Andrew Cass. But it goes on. Let's actually read the article that Andrew actually puts in his email. He says, CNN article here. CNN article here. And then he actually links to it. In other words, he either thinks you're an idiot or he actually thinks that this is a CNN article. Anyway, the actual article, written by a guy, again, in India, it starts off with this paragraph. Is it possible that network marketing firms are flocking to India because they are just not wanted elsewhere? Okay, let's just stop right there. They're flocking to India because they're not wanted elsewhere. I mean, in any of the other 86, at last count, countries that network marketing exists in, where it's actually rising and flourishing in almost all of those countries, Where else are they not wanted besides China? Several years ago, China banned all forms of pyramid schemes, multi-level sales, anything. They just completely threw the baby out with the bathwater because actually the country was being overridden by actual pyramid schemes. So they just said, let's just ban anything that pays more than one level. So besides China, who else? But according to the author of this article here in India, they're all flocking to India because they're not wanted elsewhere. And he said that his news organization here found that the British government has sued Amway for unethical practices. Well, that's true, and they lost, and Amway won. China banned all forms of network marketing in 1998. True. Sri Lanka, Nepal, and Australia have also tightened the noose. They've made their laws tougher, as is Canada, by the way, but network marketing is still perfectly legal in all of those countries. So again, it's just one country. That's all they're talking about. And this is the article that Andrew Cass just linked to, is to verify that they've been banned. He actually says banned in many major countries. That's Andrew Cass's version of this. So again, Andrew Cass, he's the one, by the way, that puts the, you know, the big red banners you see every place that says crushing blow to MLM. That's that guy who's actually in Wealth Masters, by the way, which is technically a multi-level type of compensation plan. And in my opinion, based on how it appears, it's an illegal pyramid scheme. It's very similar to Delphin, Global Prosperity, Investors, and a lot of other companies in the past that have been shut down for being illegal pyramid schemes. Anyway, the hype cycle. It's an article I wrote several years ago. You can find it in my article section, and I did an update version a few years later, back in the 90s. And the hype cycle is certainly revving up again, and there's no better example of this than a press release that I just got. Again, it appears from corporate, for a company called MMT, which is My Music Ticket. And I'm not making this up. This is not an April Fool's joke from back in April 1st. This is real, okay? The headline is, My Music Ticket founder announces that MMT is the biggest and most anticipated business launch in history. Not MLM business now. The biggest and most anticipated business launch in history. Bigger than Microsoft, bigger than Ford. Okay. The first paragraph, with over 100 million searches daily, it seems that almost everyone has been trying to find out more about the imminent and highly anticipated launch of the My Music Ticket social networking opportunity. So not total searches for everything. There's 100 million searches daily. Checking them out. You're Googling My Music Ticket. A company, by the way, that I, who studies and analyzes and researches network marketing full-time, first found out about from getting spammed by this press release. But apparently 100 million of you out there every day are Googling it. So, you know, there's a certain point where exaggeration and hyperbole just get so far out there that it almost becomes a lie. Like, do they actually really think that there's 100 million people every day looking them up on the internet, and this is going to be the biggest launch in business history? But that's, that's the hype cycle revving up again. I've been holding this one off for several podcasts. I just want to throw it in there real quick. Have any of you ever gotten this email talking about how I visited your website at, and they put your website up there, and it's always the exact same words. We've seen your website at, and then your URL, and we love it. We looked at your traffic rank and your link popularity. With that kind of traffic, we will pay you up to $4,800 a month to advertise our links on your website. By the way, I've gotten dozens of these, and they're always exactly $4,800. If you're interested, read our terms on this page and blah, blah, blah. Well, in this case, I kept this one because usually it's a page off my website, or sometimes it's someone linking to my website from their website. I mean, it's so obviously a scam. You know, someone just picks up URLs, you know, like crawls over the internet looking for them. Well, this one says, Hi, we've seen your website at http://www.scam.com/showthread.p. Somebody linked to my website within a thread on scam.com. And they've picked that up, and their machine here, their computer, has sent that to me as if it's a guy by the name of Gordon Kevin Zeller, who may or may not even be a real person. And he's emailing me to tell me that my website at that address is worth $4,800 a month, and he wants to link to it. If anybody else gets that, please don't fall for it. It's obviously a scam. All right? So, speaking of scams, this was one I kind of wanted to do last time, and I just went so far over time, like I'm doing this time. I skipped it, but I got to get to it because it's a fun subject. I call it scam school. I'm going to give you a couple of examples of ways that all of you right now, and I'm not exaggerating. Okay, these are ways right now within the next few days or even weeks. You could all, if you want to flick the angel off your right shoulder and just listen to the devil on your left shoulder, this is how you can get rich. Okay, it'll pretty much guaranteed to work 100% of the time. In network marketing, for example, there's a company called FINL, Financial blah blah blah. I forget what it stood for. Back in the 90s, and this guy had a great system. He wrote this book Forget his name. He was based here in Vegas at the time. But the company he was actually in was this called FINL, a network marketing company. It sold financial services, information. But what he said was, you pay me $2,000 and give me 1 year to build your downline for you. And after 1 year, if you haven't at least earned your $2,000 back in overrides from the downline I build for you, because I'm going to use this for advertising and lead generation, and I'll put them all in there and everything, I will pay you your $2,000 back in full, and you can keep whatever you've earned, and even any future income if you want to continue to earn it. Right? So that was the deal. And he got, I think he got 55,000 people to pay him $2,000 to build their downline for him. It was a 3x7 matrix, I think, FINL was. And when it was all over, after 1 year, every person who asked for their refund got $2,000 back in full. He paid back every single person that asked for it, and he still walked away with over $3 million. How did he do it? Well, 55,000 times 2,000 is $110 million. And you put that into a money market or maybe a CD or something for 1 year, call it about, 2.7% interest, I think, at the time was what they were going for. And there's $3 million in interest right there. Even if you had to pay back all 55,000 people their $2,000 at the end of the year, pay back every single person, and you still walk away with $3 million in interest and do absolutely nothing to build anybody's downline. Right? And you pay them all back, and they're all happy. Hey, you didn't make me any money. Pay me my $2,000 back. So basically what he got was 55,000 $2,000 interest-free loans for a year. But it gets better. Because, of course, he put these 55,000 people in the 3x7 matrix, completely filled it. So there were several hundred people at the top of that that did get $2,000 and didn't ask for their money back. In fact, I believe, I don't remember the exact numbers, but I think he made over another, I think, $1.2 million in these $2,000 payments that he didn't have to refund because he did give them more than $2,000 in earnings. He made another, I think it was something like $500,000 from selling the book. So it's that he had to sell, in bulk to all of these people that they used to promote the deal. There's all kinds of other ways that he did it. There were people that maybe only made $500, but said, you know what, I'm making $50 a month now, $500 total. I'm eventually going to get my $2,000 back. I'm not going to ask for my $2,000 back. There were people that just didn't ask for it back, didn't make any money, and still just didn't ask for it back. I mean, all in all, I think it was something like $5-something million, I think, total he pocketed. Even if he did absolutely nothing to build anybody's downline and paid everybody back their $2,000 in full at the end of the year. Yeah, he also went to that little timeout for big people place after that. So if you're thinking about copying his method, you might want to rethink it. Yeah, because he went away for a little while because that was considered to be fraudulent. By the way, there's also SEC violations too. If you sell someone, pay me and I'm going to build your downline for you, you're selling an unregistered security. It's an investment of consideration into a common enterprise with the expectation of receiving income back for the efforts of others. So it's considered to sell an unregistered security, too. Here's what I just saw in an Ask Marilyn column. I love her column. It's in the Sunday inserts. I read her column. She's supposed to have the Guinness Book of World Record for, highest IQ on record, 200 and something. And she kind of really simplified a great system of how right now you can all become investment gurus. Here's the way right now that you can get hundreds of people within a matter of days to think that you've got a perfect stock picking record, 100% accuracy in picking stocks that will go up every time. Here's how you do it. Let's say you send out a notice to 10,000 people and you pick a stock, could be any stock on the market, doesn't make any difference, and you tell 5,000 of those people this stock is going to go up tomorrow. Invest in it because it's definitely going up. 5,000 of those people, you say, this stock's going down. Tomorrow, it's definitely going down. Guaranteed, tomorrow, 5,000 of those people are going to think you got it right. Right? Now, you take those 5,000 people, send another notice. Pick any stock at random. Throw a dart into a dartboard. Doesn't make any difference. Tell 2,500 of those people, this stock's going to go up. Tell 2,500 of them it's going to go down. And the next day, you got 2,500 people that think you're two for two. Then, of course, you send out a notice to 1,250 of them, the stock's going to go up. 1,250 of them, the stock's going to go down. 3 days later, you've got 1,250 people that think you're three for three. But it gets better. Remember that first group of 5,000 where you got it wrong? You say, make up some excuse and say, that's the first one I've gotten wrong in months. Give me another shot. And then you go through the same process with them. And eventually, you're going to be 3 for 4, 4 for 5, 5 for 6. There's going to be a subset of them that's going to think you've got a, like, you know, an 80% accuracy because you've only missed one. Even the second group of 2,500 that thought you got the first one but missed the second one, you can do the same thing. Continue to go on with it and get everyone right after that, and they'll go back and go, wow, he's gotten 4 of the last 5 right. So even amongst the loser groups, you can still accumulate quite a few people that think you've got a great accuracy. So eventually, if that original 10,000 people, you could eventually accumulate several hundred people that think you're just this master stock picker. Then when it comes time to saying, now give me some really big money for me to invest for you, and I'll start making you a bunch of money, and they'll say, why not? He's been getting it right every single time. Right? Kind of like sounds a little Bernie Madoff, doesn't it? There's just a couple of examples of some very simple ways that people can fool people with methods to make them create the illusion, you know, that you're going to do these great things for them, and even if you fail, they get their money back, but you still walk away with a lot of money. I sometimes just think how rich I could be in this industry if I didn't have a conscience. MLM ignorance. There's an author, very respected author, right? She's got a pretty good educational background and everything. It's she does a lot of business type writing. She's the author of I think it's called 6 Week Startup and What Business Should I Start, and, you know, things like that. It's interesting how someone with as much education as her, as much experience in writing about startup businesses and things like that, could just get it so completely, utterly wrong when it comes to network marketing. Her name is Rhonda Abrams. I think I've commented on her in the first podcast. She's got an article out now which has been republished several times in different local media called Weigh Multi-Level Marketing Option Carefully. Here's the types of ridiculous stuff that she says about this industry, and just totally ignorant stuff about this industry. Ignorant, like a lack of information, a lack of readily available facts that she just wants to completely ignore. Because these schemes get such a bad reputation, the companies change names to make them more attractive. Yeah, they get such a bad reputation because of ignorantly and poorly worded and researched articles like Ms. Abrams. That's why she's talking about, how come we use terms like network marketing and matrix marketing and affiliate marketing and other terms we use for our industry? She goes on to say, first, let me explain how MLM or network marketing works and how it differs from regular sales or a regular business. In her process of doing that, she says, MLM programs rank high on the list of fraud schemes, and the Federal Trade Commission and most states' attorney general have warnings and multiple lawsuits against many MLM companies. No, they don't. She's wrong. She is completely, verifiably wrong. Okay, MLM does not rank high on the list of fraud schemes. Pyramid schemes do, but not MLM. The Federal Trade Commission and most states' attorneys generals do not have warnings against multi-level marketing companies. They have warnings about how to differentiate between pyramid schemes and multi-level marketing companies, but you cannot find one warning by the Federal Trade Commission or any state's AG that's warning you away from multi-level marketing programs. And I defy Ms. Abrams to find one, because they don't exist. And multiple lawsuits against many MLM companies. Well, over decades, yeah. But right now, I can think of one. YDB Travel, Illinois. Right? Again, they come and go from time to time, but there are not multiple lawsuits against many MLM programs. Now, there's lawsuits against pyramid schemes disguised as MLM programs, but again, she's just completely verifiably wrong. She goes on to say, that's one of the reasons that it's so cheap to get in, these warnings by the Federal Trade Commission and all the lawsuits. That's why it's cheap to get in. She's talking about your $25, $49 distributor kit. Many states regulate business opportunities requiring more than $200 to $500 initial investment. To stay under the radar, most MLM programs keep under that threshold. They're talking about required purchases. Our required purchases are basically a distributor kit. Your initial inventory is not a required purchase. So although we still see a lot of them at $495 and trying to stay under that threshold, they are voluntary, optional purchases. So technically they wouldn't even apply anyway, which apparently with all of her business experience and writing about this subject, she doesn't know that. She goes on to say state laws against pyramiding say that a multi-level marketing plan should only pay commissions for retail sales of goods or services, not for recruiting new distributors. True, not for recruiting new distributors. You can't get paid for just recruiting, But nowhere does it say it has to be retail to non-distributors. It could sales to distributors themselves obviously still counts. The FTC has specifically said that. Six different states have specifically put that in their statutes. The rest of them are all moot on it. Again, she's completely verifiably wrong. Even if a program isn't fraudulent, she says, from a business point of view, MLM programs share the same fundamental flaws, including, she has bullet points now, recruiting competitors. All right, now get this. Those of you who are in this business really understand it. You're going to find this hilarious. Recruiting distributors. This is a flaw in our model. She says, in MLM programs, your goal is to get lots of others selling the same product or service. In MLM, you recruit competitors. Like, she actually doesn't even get the most basic fundamental benefit of this business. That when we recruit these other distributors, and yeah, technically they're competing with us for the retail sales, but we get a percentage of their volume in overrides, like almost like a royalty in a sense. We make money from the sales of those distributors we sponsor, but she's calling them competitors. As the ultimate, most ignorant comment I think I've ever heard any anti-MLM person ever say about this industry ever in my entire 19 years in this business. But she continues to try to beat it, though, with her next several comments. Again, talking about the fundamental flaws in our business, you'll buy products or services you sell as well as training materials. This is a fundamental flaw now. Okay, you'll buy products or you're getting into business for yourself. You're going to start a business of selling these products and building a downline, managing a downline, training your distributors, and so forth, right? This could be your full-time career. This could be your livelihood if you're successful at this business. A fundamental flaw of this business, according to Ms. Abrams, is you'll actually buy the products or services that you're trying to sell. You might buy them for yourself, as well as training materials. A fundamental flaw is that you're going to try to get trained in how to do this business. She almost broke her record there, like in the very next comment. She goes on to say, more fundamental flaws. You'll face pressure. Expect to be required or pressured to buy samples, marketing materials, training courses and tapes, and attend seminars and more. Yeah, you know what? You might get pressured by your upline and by the company to actually buy some sales aids to help you sell the products, to try the products yourself, to get some marketing materials to help you market the business, to get trained about how to do it. She got that one right. I get what a horrible industry we are, that we actually want the people that we recruit to be familiar with the products that they're in the business of selling and to actually get trained on how to succeed in the business. What a lousy industry we are, aren't we? You turn your friends and family into quote-unquote prospects. Do you really want to be constantly beseeching those closest to you? Well, here's a solution to that, by the way. Don't beseech those closest to you. And I wonder if Ms. Abrams, with all of her experience in small businesses and startups and so forth, have heard of this thing called the Internet. It was invented quite a few years ago. It's being used quite a lot by network marketers. In fact, it's a very, very popular tool now, in which virtually 95% of our prospecting is done there, as opposed to going to our immediate friends and family and warm market. But according to Ms. Abrams, one of the fundamental flaws of our business is that we're going to beseech all of our friends and family and make them prospects. And by the way, again, you can just ask them, and if they're not interested, just say, okay, thanks, and never mention it again, as I've done throughout my entire career, and I've never lost a single friend in the process. Not according to Ms. Abrams, who, by the way, I'm sure has never done this business before in her life. That would be my theory. Then, of course, when she wants you to check out more information to really do your due diligence about this industry, does she give you the DSA website or the MLM Watchdog website or my website or MLMlaw.com or any website like that? No. Where does she send you? PyramidSchemeAlert.org, the haven, the central clearinghouse of anti-MLM zealots. That's her biased position on where you should go to learn more about how to simply support everything she said, not to actually get the truth. By the way, Ms. Abrams has been challenged to come onto this show and debate these issues with me, both as a comment under this article and as well as a private email to her, and she has, as usual, completely ignored me. Under the same category of MLM ignorance, a AP article, of course, AP articles rarely have the author listed, so I can't say who to blame this on, but at least they got off to a good start. This is a Phoenix AP. It says, Arizona hit hard by scammers promising good jobs. And there's a part here that says, one scam that victims have fallen for is the pyramid scheme. At least they got the term right. A victim pays hundreds or even thousands of dollars to become a distributor for a company that sells items ranging from perfume to vitamins, often at ridiculously high prices. The victims are urged to recruit friends and family to this, quote, multi-level marketing plan, end quote. Only the scammers make money and the scheme eventually collapses when there are no more recruits. So there's four sentences there. The first one talks about the pyramid scheme. The last one talks about why pyramid schemes fail. And the two sentences in between that are sandwiched in between those two pyramid comments specifically define multi-level marketing companies, which are completely different than pyramid schemes. By the way, this article not only didn't list the author, but didn't have a comment section below it for anyone to comment on. Unfortunately, that's a lot of why we have a guilt by association in this industry, because of ignorant commentary like this in our media. I have worked hard to try to get various powers that be in this industry, including a trade organization I was once a part of, to be proactively and aggressively trying to correct a lot of this. No one seems to be interested, at least on that level. I've had some private conversations with some various people. People actually at Networking Times, Network Marketing Business Journal, a couple of leaders in the industry, a tools provider, one of the attorneys. You know, on a grassroots level individually, there are a few people that said, Len, yeah, we, you know, if you'll do the work and put it all together, we'll support it. As far as some kind of effort to combat against all of this, so I don't know, maybe someday I can manage to find 25th hour in a day to do it. Here's another one that I think is kind of positive. So let's, you know, get some positive news out there as well, too. I'm not going to tell you where this article is from because you're going to get a kick out of it when you hear it. But it's called 10 Creative Ways to Earn Extra Money. This was from an author, Rachel Zupek, who writes for CareerBuilder.com. That's where she normally writes for. It's not where I found this article, though. Hang on. And she lists 10 different ways to earn some extra money. Number 4 is start a business, even a home business. But number 8 is join a direct selling company. And she goes on to talk about why joining a direct selling company, and she mentions some network marketing companies here by name, is a good way to make some extra money. So wherever this article was published must be at least willing to write positive and supporting articles about the network marketing or direct selling industry. This article was found at CNN.com. Yeah, the actual CNN.com, Andrew. Another article by M.P. McQueen. Job scams. The recession turns ugly, Mr. or Ms. McQueen says. Don't know what M.P. stands for. At the end of the article, it says, it's talking about work-at-home scams. That's the subsection. Meanwhile, own-your-own-business schemes are also spreading, including pyramid schemes disguised as network marketing, otherwise known as multiple marketing companies. Mr. McQueen, thank you. Congratulations. Somebody finally got it right. Okay. He's out of the... Oh, wait. I forgot the next paragraph. But if you earn commission primarily by recruiting others and not by selling goods or services, the enterprise likely is illegal, say officials at the FTC. Well, that's right. But then she says... The agency reported nearly 3,100 complaints about pyramid schemes, chain letters, and multi-level marketing groups in 2007. Here's the issue with that particular sentence. 3,100 complaints about pyramid schemes, chain letters, and multi-level marketing companies. Isn't that kind of like saying 3,100 complaints against drug dealers, prostitution rings, and health food stores? Right? Like, I bet you like 99% of them are probably against the drug dealers and the prostitution rings, not the health food stores. Like, you're kind of lumping it in there. I guarantee the vast majority of those complaints are against pyramid schemes and chain letters, not multiple marketing groups. But they throw that in there like that's one of the things all these complaints are coming in about. This reminds me actually of a time I called the Attorney General's office in California. In fact, I just remembered this was completely coincidentally when I did a review of CareMore, which I mentioned earlier, when I used to do an old paper newsletter and I did reviews of companies and rated them and so forth. And a lot of the things I do sort of as a matter of course is I call companies and I call different AGs in major states in their home state and I ask them how many complaints have been filed against the company. That was part of my review process. I remember calling the state of California and asking them how many complaints have been registered against this company. And they said, I'll never forget the number, 259. Now, if I would have just said thank you and hung up right then, I would have reported in my newsletter the state of California has had 259 complaints against CareMore. But I continued on with the conversation, and I forget how it came up, but I remember just keeping the conversation going and coming to find out that I think I was trying to ask what the nature of the complaints were, something like that. And I remember the woman on the line telling me that these were actually complaints/inquiries. inquiries and complaints they were lumping into the same category. When I asked her to delineate between complaints and inquiries, she said she couldn't do it. They all put them into one number. So I said, you mean these could be 259 people doing just what I'm doing, just calling in and asking about the company, and they could have zero complaints? And she said, technically, it's possible. She doesn't know how many complaints, how many are inquiries. Now, kind of the absurd irony of this is that the very act of calling her and asking her how many complaints were filed against this company added one more to the total that she gives back in response to that question. You never take anything just on the surface, especially when you call these different AGs. Like if you call a state and they say they've got so many complaints, make sure those are complaints, not complaints slash inquiries. Completely changes the picture when you get more information. So, again, Mr. or Ms. McQueen, I appreciate the fact that they at least delineated between pyramid schemes and MLM companies, but shouldn't have lumped us in that same number. You know what? We are so far out of time. I'm going to save a couple of more comments here just in the MLM ignorance section for next time. I can postpone these. I know my voice isn't sounding so bad, but when I start to get that little tinge of a taste of blood in my throat, that's my signal I should stop talking. So I think I'm going to do that. Otherwise, there won't be any more podcasts ever, which some people may not mind. I'm going to wrap it up for again. Remember, the next show after this one's produced, maybe 3-4 days later, we'll do the Randy Gage interview, which I think you'll find very surprising and very unique and unusual as far as the line of questioning and the things that we discussed. I'm still waiting for an anti-MLM zealot online that's agreed to debate me to answer back. He's agreed, and now he's disappeared again. I've also got Richard Brook coming up in a future interview as well as Mark McCool, again, the CEO of CyberWise, as well as at least one of the suspended distributors has also indicated some interest in coming on the show and kind of telling their side of the story too. So, you know, we'll see if they continue to want to pursue that. Otherwise, please keep telling me what you want on the show, what you don't want. I'm confused right now because a whole bunch of you have said it's great that you provide so much information, and then some of you say these are way too long, which I don't really get because it's a podcast. You can always stop listening to them and listen to them again. If it's a two-hour podcast and you only want it to be 1 hour, listen to 1 hour of it and listen to the other hour later. It's not a live radio show. But anyway, whatever you want me to do, whoever you want me to interview, what you want me to say more of, less of, what companies do you want me to talk about, anything you want, just keep coming in. I appreciate all the comments. So far, they've been almost entirely positive. Thank you very much. But just keep letting me know what you want this podcast to be, because this is for you. Unlike what YTB may say, it's not for my own ego and gratification, because I'm certainly not to enhance my finances, that's for sure. So, again, let me know, and keep the comments coming in. Just email me at sitefeedback@cox.net. That's the link on my website. That's where it goes to, the comment form. And we'll see you back here in a few more days with the Gage interview, and then hopefully not long after that with a whole bunch more of what's going on in the MLM industry. All right, see you then. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.